My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
To Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
No, no, no. No, no, no. It's not Willard and Dibs today. I mean, that's the name of the show. But Dibs is out. And Larry's here.
Hey.
And speaking of lineup changes, wait till you see what happens next week. We're going to be all jacked up.
That's jacked
gonna
up.
Be, yeah, jacked up. And it's brought to you by Jack's Restaurant.
It's going to be a big boy lineup.
Well, we're shaking it up. Shuffle the deck. We threw everything out on the floor, and this is how it ended up stacking back up. It's Willard and Dibs in the morning. Bonte and Joe at middays. Steiny and Goo afternoon drive.
Wow.
For 1 week and 1 week only. And also your chance to win an autographed Klay Thompson jersey.
What time will I hear the Rise guys?
The Rise guys will be on at 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. They will lead into us.
What time does Townie go off?
That's a great question.
Yeah, so anyway, that'll be next week, and it'll be fun, and I'll be tired, and I'll get a headache, and I'll take Excedrin, and I'll be fine, and I'll probably play some golf that I don't normally get to play. So it's
seriously,
good.
And you'll go out there with gray pants, with a gray shirt, with a gray hat.
I've seen your golf attire. I do like gray.
Well,
the beauty of gray, it's where white and black meet. But
you're basically a UPS driver wearing a hat.
My daughter, who's 15,
except wearing brown, you're wearing gray,
which means that she will say anything to anyone at any time.
I love your daughter. Your daughter is just the best personality of all time.
She should have
what
a sports radio
show. Yeah, I was going to say, what time's her show start,
Matt?
Holy
crap. Anyway.
She would tell people off.
I came home last week, and I didn't even know what I was wearing. I think I had gray jeans on and a gray T-shirt.
Were you breaking day 1989 or something?
Dad, you're wearing a grout fit. And I'm like, a grout fit? What's a grout fit? And she's like, yeah. It's an all-gray outfit, and it's totally out. You're not supposed to do that. This is not okay.
And then
turned around and left. And that was the end of that conversation. I'm like, I'll go back to cooking you dinner now.
That is awesome.
Good Lord.
A grout fit. That's a great line. So, I'm using that. I'm going to write that down.
That's right. So
a grout fit.
I am wearing gray shorts and a white T-shirt because I'm feeling crazy.
Look at you, you wild maniac. Taking chances.
That's right.
Pretty soon, you'll be walking down these hallways wearing a Kuzma sweater.
I'll be on in the morning wearing loud colors. Everything's going to be different next week. Who knows what's going to happen?
Warriors are going to get Kuzma, and that gigantic sweater is going to be in vogue in the Bay Area. People are going to be wearing that gigantic sweater.
I don't hate it, but it rings funny to me when people, and I'm not saying that you're saying this, but when people are like, Markkanen does not put you over the top. We're getting Kyle Kuzma. What are we doing?
I'm not saying Kuzma puts you over the top, but I think Kuzma is kind of it's kind of like the Giants. We're getting Shohei. Yes. Yes, maybe Bellinger too. Oh, wait a second. Pause. Back to reality. Michael Conforto.
Well,
Jorge Soler.
Yeah, you messed up your off seasons there.
I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying?
They got Blake Snell. He's the biggest pitcher on the market. Was he
We're
not?
We're going for Yamamoto. Stanton. We want Harper. You've got Yaz and you've got Slater.
I would argue the Warriors' moves so far have felt very Farhanian. And I will even tell you that Larry Harris, he said to us.
I love Larry Harris.
I love Larry Harris. He said to us, he sat with us at the team store the day of the draft. And he said something that I was like, oof, good thing you don't work for the Giants. People would have lost their damn head. He said to us, he goes, look, if there's a home run out there, we're going to swing for it. But if not, we're going to try to improve on the margins. What did you just say? Improve on the margins? I mean, that is essentially what people have accused Farhan of doing the entire time.
That also sounds like the play-in game, and that it also sounds like, you know, NBA middle ground.
Listen, I think we...
Doesn't that sound like NBA middle ground?
It does,
where you never get the top pick, and you never win the title? I mean, that seems kind of what on the margins kind of does.
We live in the age of social media, so I understand that context years ago got thrown out the window, the top story of a tall building, and got smashed on the ground below and run over by 8 cars. So I get that there's no context, but don't you see that what the Warriors have done this offseason is exactly what the Giants have been accused of for 6 years? Now, we don't rip them for it because we understand. Like, you did a sign-and-trade for a player who wanted to leave and probably should leave, and so he did. And you wanted to get under the apron, and you wanted to try to get under the tax or at least start to save money a little bit. If some of the things that the Warriors had done, if they had been done with a different franchise, you'd rip them for it. Now, it's circumstantial. Again, I'm not saying you should, but the Warriors basically so far this offseason have done two things, quote, improve on the margins and save money. It's not usually something you stand up as a fan and applaud.
No.
But it made sense right now. And we also don't know if there's another move coming.
And hopefully there is. Otherwise, they are, I think, kind of a net neutral situation. I mean, you know.
That's probably fair.
That's the one thing I've been wanting to ask you, and I'm sure you covered this, but I didn't hear your show when you hit this.
You didn't
hear
my
show. There was a report last week that Joe Lacob reportedly led the Warriors quote unquote cold negotiations with Klay Thompson. And when you had Steve Kerr saying, we are desperate to re-sign Klay, and you had Dunleavy saying basically the same thing. Oh, we are so desperate to re-sign Klay. We want Klay.
Did they
we
use
want
that
Klay.
Word, by the way? I didn't hear desperate.
I
heard we really want Klay back. We need shooting, and that has been expressed to me.
I heard both guys say we're desperate to have Klay back.
Okay. I might be mistaken. I don't remember the word desperate, but anyway, go ahead.
But how do you make sense of that then? So do you believe that report that Lacob reportedly led the Warriors quote-unquote cold negotiations with Klay, and that maybe Steve and Mike maybe wanted Klay to return? Steph wanted Klay to return. Draymond wanted Klay to return. But that Joe, even though maybe publicly he might have said, you know, hey, we'd love to have Bob Myers with us on draft night. Maybe he actually said that but didn't mean it. And maybe he didn't want Klay back. What do you think? I mean,
I don't think
you make sense of that?
Yeah, I don't think it's that clear cut for multiple reasons. One being none of that takes into account what Klay wanted. And Klay, as has now been very, very well detailed, has been ticked off for 2 years. So did Klay want to be back? I know
because Wiggins and Poole got extended after the finals.
Well, and
last
and,
time they won a championship and not him.
And not starting and not finishing and all of the things. The 4 closed door meetings that he had with Steve Kerr, what were they about? Like, I don't know. Something's not happy. You know what I mean?
Well, I think what we know about that was late in the year, Steve said, hey, look, you know, I think Klay acknowledged it that, hey, Steve kind of got through to him and told him, you know, enjoy the twilight. Enjoy the ride because it's over before you realize.
Right, but I don't think that that ever really landed. I know they said during the years, like Clay would have press conferences, be like, you know, Steve told me this and I figured it out and that's what I'm going to try to do now. I'm going to enjoy it. But I mean, this was 24 hours ago that Steve Kerr said this.
The difference for me as Clay's coach is, you know, from 2014 to 19, pre-injury, Clay was unflappable. You know, he rarely required much maintenance from me as a coach. He was just so happy playing and playing at a high level. And, you know, I would check in with him and he was always fine and loving life. And that changed after the two injuries. You know, he's struggled to try to get himself back to that level. And even though I think he played really well at times for us over the last few years and obviously helped us win a championship in 22, you look at the numbers, you know, even though this wasn't his best year, you know, he still averaged 18 points and shot, I think, 39% from three, something like that. So, you know, he's still a really high-level player. It's just in his own mind and I think in the minds of everyone watching, you know, he wasn't the same guy and as he was prior to the injuries, and Clay really struggled with that. And I think the stuff that went on organizationally, honestly, that I think that stuff is all sort of just a byproduct of the frustration with the injuries. And we were always, you know, in great stead with Clay in terms of our relationship and, you know, communicating how we felt about him. But he, in the end, really needed this career change, and I think it's going to be good for him.
So, I just think, when I hear that, man, he's so honest. When I hear that, I don't hear someone who, like, at the end of the year was like, yeah, man, I talked to Kerr, and I need to enjoy it. No, dude, you never got there. You never felt okay.
Well, there was a lightness. Oh, go ahead.
No, Granny wanted. What did you want to say about
it? So you guys are talking about whether or not the Warriors use the word desperate when talking about Clay. Yeah. I was going back through some old Kerr stuff trying to figure it out. I didn't find him using that word, not just yet, but I did stumble upon this, which was something he told you and Dibs.
Yeah.
The couple of day after the season ended, the loss in Sacramento, this is April 17th, so his final appearance until yesterday, on with you guys here on Willard and Dibs, and he was asked if he's worried that Clay might not return to the Golden State Warriors, and at that point, again, right when the season ended, now almost three full months ago, here's what Steve Kerr said.
I'm really not. Of course, he has every right to do so. And one of the benefits of being a free agent is just the freedom that comes with it. And it'll be nice for Clay to have some options. And I think that's one of the things that freed him up a little bit at the end of the year. It's just, you know, not having the burden of anything going forward. Just, hey, play it out and let's see what happens this summer. And so he's in a good spot in that regard. But I know Clay really well. I know he loves it here. I know how much we all love him. But I think he should be a Warrior for life. And I just think that he's still got some good years left in him. And, you know, but what we have to figure out organizationally is what does that look like on the floor? You know, the business stuff will be taken care of. You know, that stuff will be negotiated, all that stuff. But, you know, what does our team look like next year? We have to put the pieces together because I think Clay's a part of it, and I think Draymond and Steph, I think they should be Warriors for life, and that's not just a sentimental thought. We still need all three guys. They're all three still very good players, but it's just different now than it was, you know, three, 4 years ago. So we have to piece together the roster and see how we can improve.
I hear a coach saying what a coach needs to say to potentially keep a locker room and back his guys, and that's what you're going to say publicly going into negotiation. But I don't hear him say in there, damn it, Klay Thompson's going to be and needs to be a Warrior. He very much leaves open for the possibility. We've got to figure out what this looks like basketball-wise and whatnot. I don't know. That's an interesting answer.
The talk was that Clay was told that he was going to sit behind Pajemski. At least I read that in the last 10 days.
I think the Warriors wanted him to come off the bench, yes.
Yeah, so maybe that's a deal breaker. And also, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, this is a player who was such a light player as far as the room coming up and such a heavy player for them the last couple of years.
Agreed.
And you can kind of tell. Every, you know, he was having a hard time coming to grips with the twilight of his career, and it was bothering him and weighing on him. I sat in for you or for Dibs with you last year on a Thursday when we had Kerr on,
mm-hmm.
and I asked him, I said, you know, would you ever consider moving Clay to the bench and bringing him off the bench? And Mark, I could not even get the question out. Now, granted, my questions are quite long, I couldn't get the question out before he's like scoffing at it. Yep. And it was not a scoffable question based on the performance, but he wanted to scoff at it because I'm sure he knew Klay Thompson could be driving around listening to the flagship station of the Warriors, and he hears me on here. He needs to hear me scoffing at the notion of coming off the bench. But if he, you know what I mean? So they were
He's got to back his guys.
They were organizationally tiptoeing around Klay Thompson.
I mean, really quick, as recently as late June, Steve Kerr did say, quote, we desperately want Klay Thompson back.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. I don't think Dunleavy ever did.
No, Dunleavy definitely did.
But there you are on Steve. And I think you also just sort of mentioned one of the codes that is out there with Steve Kerr, because I can tell you this unequivocally. I remember the first 3 months of last season when everything was like, what's wrong with Wiggins? What's wrong with Wiggins? And he would come on here every week. Oh, my God, we believe in Andrew Wiggins. We are like, I am not worried about Wiggins in the slightest. Do you think that's what it sounded like in the pregame meetings on the coaching staff or when he's talking to Dunleavy or Lacob? I don't.
Steve keeps it together.
Yes, he's got to back his guys. When he's talking publicly, you have to back your guys.
Yeah.
But there has been, I can promise you, a bunch of Andrew Wiggins concern for more than a year now, dating at least all the way back to when he went away for a while at the end of you know, the not last season, but the season before that. There's been a lot of concern about him. And yes, the reports are now all over the place that the team has been trying to trade him to anybody who will take him. But if we had asked him about Wiggins yesterday, he'd have backed him again.
Right.
And we did ask him about Wiggins with regard to why the organization kept him out of playing in the Olympics for Team Canada. And his answer, again, in a way, was backing the player. He's like, look, Andrew Wiggins, this is, as you think about coming off of health and it's the off season and what prepares us best for the season, this was the decision that we tried to make. In fact, here, instead of me paraphrasing it, here's what he said.
This is just the decision that we made, and based on his health and his preparation for next year, and these decisions are difficult, but that was the route we wanted to go.
Let me translate. We might trade him, and there's no way in hell we're letting him get hurt. I'm not gonna say that on the show,
right?
But yeah, he's great at that.
Steve keeps it together. Steve keeps it together. You know, that's his goal. But yeah, I mean, it's just when you start making when there needs to be an explanation for why players are playing and other players aren't playing, then you know when it's not readily apparent and to the fans who are in the stands, that's when you enter into a problem zone.
Yep.
For example, Luis Matos, National League Player of the Week, has a rough 10 days. All of a sudden, we're looking at Yaz and Slater and these nobodies. And those guys are, and Matos is back in the minors. Well, that didn't make a whole lot of sense for a team that wasn't really going anywhere. And now it's starting to make a little bit more sense. Now Slater's gone, and who knows where Yaz will go. They're starting to play their young guys. But, like, when you watch the Warriors, there were times where you had to, if you didn't know the backstory, you'd be like, well, why is Moses Moody not playing? Why is Clay playing this much? And it's because Moses Moody is not won rings, and so he's just got to take whatever minutes we give him, and we're tiptoeing around Clay because Clay's having a hard time dealing with the twilight of his career. And so I'm glad. I'm glad that Clay moved on because, he can just be freed up to play basketball.
Yeah.
In Dallas, it will just be about basketball. It won't be about what you are composed to what you were.
There you go.
It will just be about basketball.
Yeah, he doesn't have to hear it, and the fans won't even think about it. Dallas fans are not going to be worried about who Clay used to be.
What he was.
They don't care. They don't want him to even be their first or second best player.
Right.
They know that he's not.
And he'll start for them, but if by chance he has to come off the bench it'll be easier for him to come off the bench there than here.
Let's go to Daniel in Livermore. Hi, Daniel. You're on with Willard and Kruger. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man.
Thanks for always putting on a good show, making our commute good. I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
I am curious. I don't know how long you guys stayed on this Farhan Warriors comparison, but I feel like I have to defend the Warriors a little bit here because I don't know when the last time the Giants landed a KD or even a Chris Paul or went all in on swings like that. And I really just feel like the Giants have no excuse when it comes to big signings. And I feel like the Warriors are dealing with, like, we have a superstar. We're dealing with how do we maximize this superstar's time frame but also not make ourselves irrelevant. I feel like the Giants don't even have a superstar right now. They've had shots.
The Giants have signed Aaron Rowan.
My God, you went back 15 years.
The Giants have signed Mark Melanson. They've got their KD. Oh, no.
Well, Daniel, here's what I'd say. We didn't stick with it for long because it was a circumstantial comparison. I think I'm with you. The situations couldn't be more different. But what I am pointing out is that because the circumstances are different, it shows the timing that is involved in certain things with certain organizations. The Warriors are doing something, and I think this is what I was trying to say. The Warriors are doing something that we accept because of who they are and because we understand this moment. If they were someone else, we would torch these moves. The Warriors have done two things this offseason. They've saved money and improved on the margins. That's what organizations get ripped for. But this is circumstantial. And in this moment, it somewhat, depending on your view and depending on what happens next, it makes a lot more sense. Plus, they play in a league with completely different rules with this new second apron. And if you blow that up, the penalties are so horrible that, in the NBA, we understand it a little bit better.
But there are common denominators here that both are going with middling-type veterans over younger players with higher upside. The only difference is the Warriors have won titles. Farhan's won nothing. He's won no titles.
That's correct.
And then you don't get as much of a wide berth when you haven't put up, when you haven't won championships and you haven't hung banners. I mean, it's just the way it is. Now, the Giants have, but Farhan hasn't. So, if Sabian were still running the show, he'd probably have greater latitude from the fans than Farhan just because he authored those and constructed those championship teams. Farhan doesn't have that to lean on, so he's judged simply by what people see. And you know what? I like Matos. To me, the Giants are more fun to watch with Matos and Ramos and Luciano and the young guys with talent than they are watching Yaz and Flores and Slater.
I think everyone agrees. Everyone agrees with that.
But they might win a game or two more with the older guys.
Maybe.
But I'd rather watch Luciano, Matos, and Ramos.
I don't think the Warriors have been in the Giants' position much, if at all, in the last 15 years, where you're more than halfway through a season and you've got more losses than wins and all of that stuff. I'd also argue back, though, and again, it gets tough to do this because the sports are so different with the way they operate, but we act like Brian Sabian was always bringing in the top free agent. Like, how many times in the last generation of Giants baseball have they gone out, gotten the big fish of the offseason as a free agent and brought him in? Like, Bonds?
Only half of Sabian's run did they even have the pocketbook to do that.
Exactly.
They didn't have the money in the 90s to go after big-time free agents. They signed Bonds and Bonds only.
And when they won three World Series, I would argue
a lot of homegrown guys.
Yeah, at no point did they have, like, wow, that 40 home run bopper.
He made great trades.
Absolutely.
I mean, he traded Charlie Culberson for Marco Scudero.
Yes.
And watched Scudero become wasn't he the MVP of the LCS or something like that?
Did he win the MVP?
He might have won the MVP.
He had a bunch of base hits.
He traded for Kenny Lofton in July. The Giants scored in 2002. The Giants went from scoring 5 runs a game to 7 runs a game. They went to the World Series. So Sabian
traded Zach Wheeler for Carlos Beltran.
That was a disaster trade.
Everybody's got warts.
And that trade was a bad trade. I said it at the time because Buster Posey was out for the year. And Buster, you weren't winning any championships without Buster Posey.
Did he make the A.J. Przinski trade, too?
He did.
There you go. He did. There's another one.
Joe Nathan and Francisco Liriano.
Boof Bonzer. Right. For A.J. Przinski, who then kicked Stan Conti, the Giants trainer, in the balls in spring training. Just, no, seriously, I called
such
Ned.
A bad dude.
I called Ned Colletti.
Oh my god!
At the time, and I just had him on the week before.
He kicked Stan Conti in the balls.
No, so what happened was the ball came up in dirt in a Cactus League game, ricocheted and hit AJ in the balls.
Okay,
and Conti came out to check on him. And he reached and he leans down. He said, "How does it feel?" And he might have giggled. And AJ punched him in the sack in spring training. And Stan Conti's now doubled over.
Listen,
so I called Ned Colletti. I just talked to him the week before. This was one of their major moves, and there was no. I didn't know anything about this. Nothing. Because it was a spring training game. Wasn't on TV. Wasn't on the radio. I said, hey, how's Pierzynski looking? I'm really excited to see Pierzynski. They just got him. He wasn't even in spring training for 2 weeks. He goes, you know what? Brian and I don't care for his disposition or something.
Yeah.
We don't care for his disposition or we don't care for it was like something really I'm like, what? You just traded three players for this guy.
Yeah.
He's like, his presentation. You know, Brian and I are less than thrilled with his presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, offensively? Defensively? I'm like, I'm like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
And, you know, he wouldn't tell me until, like, literally later in the year. He's like, this is what happened.
No man should ever strike another man there.
No. But A.J. Pierzynski, he had a big attitude.
Bad dude. Yeah. He's a bad dude.
I know he's a bad dude, but he had a big attitude.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it worked out that way.
Yeah. Well, it's also why the Giants didn't do a lot of free agents. And if you want to know why, it was largely because of Pierzynski. Because their belief is when you draft and develop your own guys, you know who you have. You know what your guys.
Well,
before they get to the big leagues.
I would argue big time free agents.
Now,
maybe this is different in the NBA. I guess you could argue it certainly because the NBA is so star heavy and you just know who the dudes are. So it's a little bit different. And yes, there are exceptions in baseball. Shohei Ohtani would be one, but long-term, big-money free agents in baseball, bad bet. Less than 50-50.
What?
Usually doesn't work.
Oh, yeah.
It's usually a bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny.
It's like sidestepping landmines.
The biggest name free agents that the Giants, if we go back 30 years, the biggest name free agents that the Giants have signed, obviously there's Bonds, and that worked out wonderfully.
Zito,
which the only reason we look back on it with any joy at all is because that dude saved the thing at the 11th hour.
He beat Verlander in the World Series.
With like two starts. Think of it.
How about the bunt in St. Louis? Remember that one?
Yes.
Remember Kruko? Oh, look at that. That's a pearl. That's a pearl.
$125 million, and it was awful. And then at the very end,
he did win 16 games
he's
last
like,
year.
What about this? And we're like, we like you.
I used to go at it with Ratty because Ratty had the, you know, and another year.
Dude.
They're going to pay him $26 million, and then there's another year. And I'd be like, Gary, he won 16 games this year.
By the way, your Radnich sounds more like your Barbieri, but that's just me. That was a bad signing.
Craig, you're so cute. You're mad about the Giants. It's so cute. You're so cute.
It's not a bad Ralph at all.
I love my meat cheese. You kidding me? The lemon pepper wings. Craig, you're so cute. You get mad at the Giants.
It's pretty good. I can tell you had a lot of practice.
I can do my Trent Baalke.
You know, it's outrageous. You guys are talking all this. Where's the football? I haven't heard anybody talk about one torn ACL since I've been up here.
Your Baalke sounds like Guru doing Doc Rivers.
I'm just saying.
Anyway.
The head coach of the Knicks. It sounds a little like the Knicks coach.
Anyway, we're completely off.
Thibodeau.
Yeah, that's like, it's usually not a great thing. And the funny thing is when you homegrown a dynasty, I'll just make up a tense here. When you do that, the problem is you pop out the other side and the fan base wants to replicate it.
It just doesn't last forever.
Impossible.
I mean, there's only one Spurs.
What the Giants did between 10 and 14, like,
magical.
And what the Warriors did.
What the Niners did from 81 through 99 was crazy.
I hate saying this. It is highly likely that all of us who are breathing this beautiful Bay Area air today will never see it again in our lifetimes. It is so hard. And there is so many breaks and so many accidents, like Steph Curry's ankles, which allowed you to get Iguodala and Durant.
Yeah, or like, Steph Curry, told you he wasn't gonna play, wasn't gonna work out for you, and Nelly and Larry Riley said, "We don't care. Mm-hmm. We're drafting you." I mean, this is how this works. I mean, I was watching the retrospective the other night, the 30 for 30 on the Pistons, Bad Boy Pistons. Supposedly, Jack McCloskey interviewed Isaiah Thomas, and Mark Aguirre went one, Isaiah Thomas went two. And Isaiah wanted to play for Chicago, and they picked like five or six. So they did an interview, and every question McCloskey asked him, he gave the wrong answer. And finally, McCloskey looked at him and said, "Hey, I don't care what you say to these questions. If you're there at two, I'm drafting you." And sure enough, he did. And of course, they became the Bad Boy Pistons.
And the rest is history. Yeah. And he became a champion and all that stuff. Like, you have to have so many things fall into place. And the Giants, they had a bunch of good draft picks that worked out. And the whole thing was right. And it was a homegrown core. And the supplemental things that they threw at it in free agency were not necessarily great.
Well, and look at the core four is going to be honored this weekend, right? Yeah. Aren't they honored this weekend?
Correct.
I mean, Sergio was a giant prospect. Javier Lopez, I think they got for John Bowker.
Right.
Affelt. They signed as a free agent. Santiago Casilla was just not a very highly coveted guy. He was a free agent that signed for nothing.
Like, go 10, 12, and 14.
These guys were incredible.
Who were both the highest priced and the most important free agents? Free agents.
What year?
From 10 to 14. For like at any point through that whole run, what sticks out to you that was like, well, that, like, I guess I'd argue
they made good trades. They got Pat Burrell. They added Pat Burrell when he was hitting 198.
Well, Hunter Pence.
And he had 20 home runs for them.
Hunter Pence, but Hunter also Pence. That's a trade. You know what I mean?
And the trading for Jake Peavy was big.
Right. The free agents, like you mentioned, Burrell and Ross were like sitting on couches.
Ross won the LCS MVP.
Yes.
And he was streaky. And they got him in they acquired a really streaky.
He was a waiver pickup.
He was a block.
He was a block.
They were blocking Cody Ross from going to the Padres.
It's a great example.
And they got forced to take Cody Ross. And I remember I was talking to Roxy Bernstein at the time. And Roxy Bernstein.
Please explain.
Roxy was the voice of the Marlins.
Mm-hmm.
Please explain.
And so I said, "Hey, what do you think of Cody Ross coming to the Giants?" And he said, "You know what? He's one of the streakiest players I've ever seen."
Yeah.
And sure enough,
he caught fire at the right time.
He caught fire, and he was like, you couldn't get him out.
Right, right.
It's amazing.
And what? Was it it was Roy Halladay, right, that he took deep twice?
Yeah, 2010.
May he rest in peace.
Maybe Juan Uribe might have been the big free agent addition.
Yeah, but I mean, even that, like, it was, you remember Juan Uribe as a great thing because he ripped one over the fence in game one against Cliff Lee.
I mean, it's amazing.
I don't even know if it was still against Cliff, but it was against the Rangers.
It's amazing, really, that the Giants won those World Series.
Of course it is.
He hit the three-run homer in game five that won the World Series.
Yeah.
Right.
No, that was Renteria.
Yeah, my bad.
Flem's voice went out.
They had Gregor Blanco starting in left field in the World Series. They had Travis Ishikawa. This is a team that had Barry Bonds in left, and yet they had Travis Ishikawa in left field in what, 20? Was it the 20? Was it 14? Ishikawa beat the Cardinals in the ball to the arcade.
Ishikawa's homer was the 14.
That was 14 LCS.
Yeah.
That was amazing. That was probably the biggest night.
That's the most famous hit. That's the most famous hit.
I interviewed him that night.
What?
But you know what? There were so many people wanting to interview him, right? It was his moment.
And he was like, I'm only talking to Kruger.
It was like the Bobby Thompson. You know, it was like interviewing Bobby Thompson after the 51.
His career was made, yeah.
So I go to his locker, 20 people deep. I'm like, no, I'm not going to even bother with that.
Yeah.
So I go talk to other people, Vogelsong, other people. Come back half hour later. Maybe it's 10 people deep. I'm still not dealing with that. Finally, I interview a bunch of people. Now it's like midnight. I'm getting ready to go. He's finally standing at his locker by himself.
Exhausted.
Exhausted because he's talked to everybody.
And only one person has the nerve to go up and ask him.
I go up to Travis. I go, Travis, I go, I know this is your night. I know you're tired of talking about it. And before I could even say it, he's like, I'll never be tired of talking about it.
And it's true. He's still talking about it. He's still talking about it.
And he gave me like a 15, 20-minute interview solo.
He's a great dude. He's a great
dude. I remember going back, and I forget the PD at the time, but he's like, dude, you got a solo interview with Ishikawa? Like, you don't understand. I stood around for 3 hours waiting for that thing.
It's like I just got home like 10 minutes ago.
Seriously.
If you guys ever want to play a fun game, it is Name the Giants Starting Outfield 2014 World Series Game 7.
Well, the guy who dropped the ball out there was Juan Perez.
Gregor Blanco.
Which outfield?
Juan was in left. Greg was in center. Who's in right?
This is the easiest one.
This is the easiest one. Randy Wynn? Oh, who?
Pence?
2014.
Oh, Pence. Pence. Yeah, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Juan Perez, Gregor Blanco, Hunter Pence. Game 7 World Series.
Do you remember, correct, true or false, was the
How
final?
How amazing was that
Was the final score 2-1 or 3-2?
3-2.
Okay. Do you remember how the Giants, who got the hit, because it was early in the game, who got the hit that drove in the third run? Do you remember who it was?
Morse?
Correct answer. And it was with a little jam job over probably Hosmer's head at first base. It was not like you exit velocity 12.
Right. Morse. Good Giant, man.
All of the things we're talking about right now are how my oldest son, he will do this often.
Abe,
he will walk in, we're watching the Giants, and he will get so mad at the luck factor of baseball. Where you can hit a ball 111 miles an hour right at somebody and they catch it.
That's a big league.
And then you can hit the ball 30 miles an hour and the dying quail falls and you're down 2-0 because somebody walked because the umpire didn't call the ball right. And he's just
blooping
like
a blast.
He's like, baseball's so stupid. It's stupid. He loves it, but he's like, it's so stupid. You can hit the ball so hard and get nothing for it. And all the things we just went through is why some people say that the Giants weren't a dynasty. Because it's not like they were out here dominating people all the time. They got the right mix at the right time and the right things happened. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. But to come out on the back end now and get so livid, and this is reason number 4 why, and it's not so much anymore because now it is kind of a total bleep show going on over there to a degree. But at times, I was more patient with Farhan than others because, like, you can't ask that to be replicated. It won't. It's not happening again. We will die. And that won't happen again because it was like we just went through 32 of the 1 million amazing things that happened to make that be a reality.
Well, I think, you know, it's a great discussion. I think there's two key factors that team had that is the recipe for a dynasty.
Well, one of them's Buster Posey.
A Hall of Fame catcher.
Yes.
And a Hall of Fame manager. I mean,
right,
if you really think about it,
is he a Hall of Fame manager if those quirky things don't all happen?
That's a great question, but I would probably say no because you wouldn't have the rings.
Put it on the list.
But here's the thing. Think about the greatest teams, you know, that we've ever seen. Big Red Machine, 70s. Johnny Bench, Sparky Anderson.
Great players. Yeah, but
Hall of Fame catcher, Hall of Fame manager.
Good point.
Yankees, 2000s, you know, late 90s. Joe Torre. Jorge Posada. Great, great catcher, Hall of Fame manager. Buster Posey, Hall of Fame catcher, Hall of Fame manager.
Yeah.
I mean, these are some of the greatest teams we've ever seen. They all seem like they have the great catcher I mean, you go back to the Yankees in the 50s, you know, Yogi Berra and whoever was in the dugout that particular year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it just seems like that's the beginning. You want to win the World Series? Get an awesome manager. I did an interview with Boach after 2014, and I said to him, you sat Pablo Sandoval in the 2010 World Series for Mike Fontenot.
I did.
You know? He
worked out.
Grab a beer. Get yourself a beer.
Three rings.
But I go, you played Buster Posey every single inning of every single playoff run. Why? And he's like, because he's a genius.
Best player on the team.
Buster's a genius.
Buster Posey.
He's a genius. He's a genius.
He's a good player.
But, I mean, Boch would know. Boch would know.
Yeah.
And he's like, this guy's a genius as a catcher, as a game caller. Heck, you can go back. There's examples in that 2014 World Series run where you could see, I forget who it was. I think it was the final out. Who's the big catcher for Kansas City who rakes?
Salvador Perez.
He's a total.
Same last name. I keep
he's
forgetting.
An incredible low ball monster.
Right.
So Buster Posey was basically standing up.
Standing up, yep.
He was almost standing up because he wanted to make sure.
And Mad Bum didn't miss.
That you threw that ball above the hands.
And he popped him up.
And he popped him up.
And he popped him up. Yeah.
That's Buster.
Buster's the greatest Giant ever, period.
Well,
I mean,
he's not the greatest Giant ever.
You know what I mean.
But he's one of the greatest catchers of all time.
Greatest champion in a Giant uniform, I think I'd argue. I mean, Willie Mays is the greatest baseball player.
He was a genius. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, watching all the Willie retrospectives have been really cool. One of the ones that really stands out is the fact that he's standing there in center field, and with his glove, he's positioning the left fielder and the right fielder. You're moving up, you're moving back.
Also a genius.
Yeah.
Just a complete
Willie
genius.
Willie Mays, genius baseball player.
All right, back in a moment, because I'm not letting you get out of here today without me asking you about this Shanahan thing. And we'll get to your calls if you're on hold, 888-957-9570. Larry's in for Dibs, Willard and Dibs.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Mark, you out here sounding like a hater, my brother.
Do you have to be a homer?
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, let's rock and ride. Heading for 6 o'clock. Grandy, man, what are you leading with? What are you leading with tonight?
You're going to hear the newest Warrior, Slow-Mo,
who was
on with Stiney and Goo earlier today.
That's right, yeah. Who Larry Krueger unceremoniously ripped about 2 hours ago.
I'm a big fan. I just
you're gonna hear him talk about how he enjoys Draymond Green's game and kind of models himself after that, which is what Steve Kerr told you guys yesterday.
There you go. There you go. Now, all you really said, Larry, is that he's got an ugly game, and he does.
Yeah.
But effective. Effective.
I just, it's not something that I'm not running to the TV to see slow-mo.
So anybody else, current Bay Area comp, you've got an ugly but effective game. And take Draymond out of it, because Mark just kind of mentioned that's already the comp. Anybody else who's ugly but effective, and I don't mean their looks.
Ugly but effective.
Yeah, like it's not the prettiest sort of an approach. Maybe Pajemski? Pajemski's got kind of an awkward...
I got one.
Who?
Tyler Rogers.
Oh.
Tyler Rogers.
That's actually good. I'm glad you're admitting that he's effective.
You were taking shots
earlier this year.
I don't want to see Tyler Rogers in any kind of high leverage thing, especially in extras.
Okay,
because
that's different.
You can't. He's too easy. If you go up there as a hitter saying I'm going to wait and slap it the other way, you can do that. In extras with a guy in second. That's game. That's ball game.
I'm going to separate your points because I agree with you about extra innings because I think with the rule of the runner at second base, you need more strikeout stuff.
Right.
But to say you don't put him in leverage situations, last 3 years, this guy's been an eighth inning monster. That's what the stats say.
Stats lie.
No, they don't.
Stats lie.
He's been really good. He's been really good. I know he makes you nervous.
I never feel comfortable. I always feel like if you scout, like when the Giants play the Dodgers in the playoffs, in the one game playoff in 2021, didn't they hit him out of the pen?
The one game playoff?
Or the three game playoff?
Well, it was five.
First round. They lost in three, right?
No, they lost in four.
Four, okay.
Yeah, they lost in four.
So didn't
they lost in five. Sorry, they lost in five. They went to the end.
Okay, didn't he pitch ineffectively in that series? I'm pretty sure he did. And it was
I don't remember.
It's because you can wait too long on a guy who throws 79 miles an hour.
Well.
And you can slap it the other way. So if you have a game plan against him, I think he's easily beatable. I like Tyler Rogers as for his rubber arm nature, and I like him as a dude. He's a great guy. And I even like Taylor a little bit. I think Taylor might be able to even bring you something in a trade this summer if you moved him. But I like Tyler as a you know, kind of in between.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
You ready for the stats?
Yeah.
You're going to love these.
Okay.
Boy, I would love everyone. The perception is reality. Let's just remember that. Your statement was you remember Tyler Rogers getting hit around the yard a little bit.
Yeah.
Against the Dodgers in 2021.
I was guessing.
In the postseason. He pitched in four of the five games. His ERA... Zero.
Hall of Famer. Freaking Hall of Famer.
Zero. His ERA is zero.
I'm not a Tyler Rogers guy. I'm just not.
But that's my point. Like
you have to admit his game is ugly.
Oh, it's funky.
It's funky.
It's very funky.
Okay, funky,
it's
ugly.
It's very funky. All right. Hey, Mike in Santa Clara wants to say something about the Giants. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Yeah. Hey, thanks, guys. I know it's at the end of the day, but it wasn't even something to say. I actually had a question, and Larry, I'm glad that you're on too.
Thank you.
I actually had it. Yeah, always a pleasure, brother. I just wanted to ask you guys, when it came down to that, the 1 year where the Phillies ended up winning it, and we went into that trade where we got Cabrera instead of Hunter Pence, do you actually think Hunter Pence would have been the difference instead of Cabrera? And I believe Cabrera also got hurt.
You're not talking about Cabrera. You're talking about,
for him.
You're talking about Carlos Beltran.
But Carlos Beltran, I'm sorry. Yes, yeah, I'm getting my name
mixed up. Yeah, I was like, I'm racking my brain going, dude, what trade did I miss?
Pence was traded that year as well from Houston to Philly.
To Philly.
Yeah. And the Giants traded Wheeler for Beltran. And the reason it was a bad trade was just because the Giants were already done that year because they were never going to win anything without Buster. That was my big argument at the time, is I just didn't like that. But the Giants felt like they were the defending World Series champions and that they had to give it an honest try. And so Sabian,
made that
trade. And Wheeler had a perfect build for a pitcher, long, you know, broad shoulders, and became one of the best pitchers in the league.
That's the thing. Like, in the end, there have been so many prospects that get traded at the deadline, and it's not always about does the acquired player play great. Like, Chris Bryant was largely pretty good as a Giant. Not perfect, not great, whatever, pretty good.
Whether you win or not.
Yeah, okay, but we view that trade through the lens of, well, what's happening with the guys that you gave up?
Yeah.
And I know that's still pretty early to assess that, but it's like they're not doing much. The Beltran thing hurts like hell because Wheeler worked out.
Right.
It doesn't always work out.
Right. Sabian made 20 trades that all did work out, including Jason Schmidt for...
Oh, yeah.
Jason Schmidt for what was it?
Somebody.
It was Vogelsong. Yeah. It was Vogelsong and something else.
He went in the Schmidt trade?
Yeah.
And then
they
got him back?
And they got him back. After he went to Japan.
This is so stupid to do with 2 minutes left, but can you give me, like, you sent me a text earlier today of things Niners related.
Yeah.
And one of the things you wrote on a list, players losing confidence in Kyle? ? What do you even mean by that?
The fact that they didn't know the rules in overtime
in the Super Bowl,
and they basically talked about it. I mean, you had guys saying, "Hey, we never discussed it." I'm not saying that I believe that players have lost confidence in Kyle, but we've now seen Kyle lose multiple times with 10-point leads in the playoffs, and at some point you wonder if anybody loses faith or loses confidence. It wouldn't be totally crazy to feel like the player... I know for a fact, because I'm in there talking to the players, that they believe a lot in Kyle Shanahan. But this last loss was pretty brutal, to be completely honest. I mean, even though you lost to Kansas City, who was great...
No, Steve Young has said it. This was their best chance.
Yeah.
This was their best chance.
So, as far as what... You know, do the players still have that unwavering belief in Kyle Shanahan, or are they questioning some of the game management skills that have made them fall short? I mean, a lot of people feel like last year was their year, that Kansas City was in a transition year, that Green Bay and Detroit were too young, that Philly had the bad coordinators and injuries in the secondary, and that last year was their best chance to get it done, and they just didn't get it done. So
I'm going to give you 10 seconds. Can you name the position player the Giants traded along with Vogelsong for Jason Schmidt and John Vanderwall?
Yes, I can.
Who?
Armando Rios.
That's very good job. That's right. You only needed like 2 seconds. Great job. Always fun when you're here, buddy.
Ask me my kid's birthday and then see how much time it takes me. I mean, it could take me a long time.
Well, how many kids you got?
That I know of?
What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Here comes Grandy, everybody. For Larry, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.
No, don't talk about that.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.